Hei hei, og velkommen til den gyllene humle. Jeg Øljørn. Denne gangen har jeg ikke med meg Henning. Jeg har med en rusten stemme, for jeg har vært forkjølet. Men jeg sitter hos Lervig, og her har jeg fått med meg Dave. Podcasten I dag kommer til å bli på engelsk, så dere får holde ut med den dårlige engelsken min, og så ser vi hvordan dette blir.
Unnskyld.
Hi Dave, welcome to the Gyllene Humle.
Hi Jørn, thanks for having me.
So, let's start a little bit with, who are you?
Ah, yeah, I'm Dave.
Yeah.
I'm a Canadian guy, came here to Lervig about 10 years ago. I moved for the, one of the rare foreigners who moved just for the job, not for oil, not for a girl. So I've been here 10 years. My position now, actually don't know. I used to be production manager, but now we have Shane, who we were just talking to in the rack house there. He's the production manager now, so I'm titleless, but involved in mostly production things, planning, yeah. Innovation kind of things, and a little bit everywhere. But that's my story in a tiny little nutshell.
So your background for coming here and doing the brewing and...
Yeah, my background, when I was in university, Well, I don't know if I wanted to be a doctor, but my parents certainly did. So I did the science route and quickly understood that to become a doctor, a physician, then it's too much work.
Yeah.
And I liked too much to have fun. So I veered into sciences, which was something I loved anyway. So with the idea that I would become a professor. So then once I got into my graduate studies, doing my master's, I also understood, holy shit, it's way too hard to become a professor as well. So I got my master's in neuroscience, and I was working in university, like teaching, doing research, and liking it, but knowing that ultimately this wasn't going to be where I ended up. And then my brother, who was living in Stavanger at the time, he's still in Norway. He's an engineer doing oil stuff. But I visited him and through him met Mike Murphy, who's the brewmaster here. And basically kind of spent a few days on my holidays filling kegs because my brother was at work.
Yeah.
And then Mike planted the seed that in my mind that, hey, why don't you come work in Norway for beer? Which was nothing I'd ever considered. I didn't know that beer, you could just go into beer. So then 6 months later, I moved over to Norway and started my beer career with zero experience other than like homebrewing, of course, and loving craft beer and everything. But
yeah, because, so you had been doing some homebrewing.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Back in Canada, it was my lab mate and I. He was much more serious and technical than I was. I was there to...
You were the tester?
I was there to... Yeah.
Yeah, because we have a lot of... Or we have listeners on both sides. We have a lot of homebrewers.
Yeah.
But we also have, like, only beer lovers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was both coming in.
Yeah.
Definitely looking at... certainly Norwegian homebrewers are basically professionals compared to what we were doing 10, 15 years ago. But, we were making good beer, or so we thought.
Yeah.
I would like to have some of those beers now and see how they were. But
or maybe not.
Yeah, or maybe not, yeah. But, discovering hops and stouts and all that 15 years ago was what I'd love to do. Yeah.
So you've been a part of Lervig during all these big, what did you call them, waves of, let's say, the IPA wave and the sour wave.
Yeah.
How was that?
It was coming as like a background as a, let's say, a beer nerd. When I came to Lervig, of course, Lervig has always made, at least since I've been here, like... good craft beer. But, I always wanted to do like the crazier stuff, and at the time, like, Mike was making great stouts here, so that part was covered. But yeah, sours and IPAs, I always felt like when I arrived, I wanted to do that. But of course, it's much different as a commercial brewery to just adopt a style.
Yeah.
Versus when you're home brewery, just do whatever you want, decide, and next day it can happen. So it was a bit slow, I think. For us, let's say, for the sour beers, we just didn't. Beers that were sour for us were something that went wrong in the tank. So our first sour beer was a collaboration with, I think it was Tuol. Was it Tuol or was it Beaver? No, I think it was Tuol.
Yeah.
Kentucky Uncommon. It was a kettle sour, which was awesome. We were learning a whole new style of beer, kettle souring. There was no commercial kettle sour strains at the time, so we were just using Biola. really learning kind of how to make the kettle souring work on our gigantic system. I guess you saw.
Yeah, so we were pretty much learning by doing.
Yeah,
step by step.
Of course, we had Tobias here from Tuol, who, you know, they had been doing it.
Yeah.
And so he knew what to do, but at the same time, it's a completely different system, so he can only kind of guide so much. So it was, I think, that beer actually came out pretty well, and then we had the confidence then that we started doing Sour Susie, which is still in our portfolio.
Yeah.
And I think is a really nice kind of introductory sour for people, you know.
Yeah.
Very even, clean.
Entry level.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So it was mostly kettle sours, and then we had, what would have been doing otherwise? Well, I mean, it was mostly kettle sours up until Rackhouse started, and then now we're, you know, trying to play a bit more with, let's say, mixed firm stuff, and
we're coming back to the Rackhouse part a little bit later. But when it comes to IPA, everybody was starting making IPAs at one time, and you also did. And what I really, really remember is when Perle for Sveen was launched, because this was something different from you guys.
That was kind of a turning point for Lervik in terms of our international reputation, because I think we did have a good reputation through Mike. I mean, he's been in the industry in Europe for as long as kind of craft beers been here, so everyone knows his previous, everyone in the industry knew his previous work from his days in Italy and Denmark. So when he came here, he brought that reputation with him. But IPA wise, I think we were making okay IPAs, but nothing that was really well sought after until Tasty Juice and Perle for Sveen, which was. We had a trip to Boston for Mikkeller thing, I think in 2015? And yeah, we had, you know, the other half guys and Trillium stuff were there. And we saw, I think Mike had already tried one of these New England hazy IPAs, which it just looked like yeast slurry. I wouldn't say it looked gross, but it was like, something that if we saw in our brewery, we'd be like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
We need to let this settle out for another week or two.
Yeah.
But then you try it. It was pure juice. It was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
This is really like, if you're a hophead, for sure, this is the nectar.
Yeah.
This is what you want to try. So kind of, it's the Americans. They're always, certainly in craft beer, they're ahead.
Yeah.
And got a bit of information from them about how they were doing this, but thought, okay, well, I don't know if we can pull it off here. We got our own production, whatever. So had it in our minds until we went to Gothenburg a few months later for All In Festival, and we're at some metal bar, and Stigbergets had their West Coast IPA at this metal bar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's get, you know, support the boys, support the local guys. Had it, and it was a New England IPA. I was like, oh shit, these guys are doing it. Why the fuck can't we? So I think we got back from there and started working on exactly how we were going to do this. And I think our first attempt was Tasty Juice. It was a, you know, no bittering hops, no like late boil additions, just all kind of whirlpool. And then, you know, warmer fermentation, we got the whatever yeast. I think the first one that came out was close enough to what we had tried from these other guys. We're like, all right, I think we're onto something here. So I think between, you know, us and Stigbergets, and of course there was others doing, I can't remember at the time, there was a few more, but I think we were one of the first in Europe to kind of start making these. And, of, you know, with the size of our brewery, it was a bit easier for us to get more of it out there. So then after that came Supersonic and Parlor and everything. So I think things caught on quickly, and it being one of the, you know, those being among the first hazy New England, whatever you want to call it, IPAs coming out in Norway, certainly, but in Europe, then it really boosted our international profile for sure. And then it just kind of, people weren't aware of us. We're then looking at our other beers. We already had a really well-established stout barley wine kind of profile. So it just kind of helped us catch on internationally. And then, you know, we were still trying to shed the old Lærvik before Mike came around, which was, you know, I think it was Gruesome and Summerall and
yeah,
a few things that, yeah, it was hit and miss from what I gather. I wasn't really around for those days. So I don't know. They had the best local reputation, and people just kind of wrote it off. And then they would travel to Spain or even Thailand, and they'd see that there's Lærvik there, and people were really excited about it. And they'd be like, "Oh, really?
Yeah,
I'm from there." And they come back and be like, "Yeah, Lærvik's good again." So, yeah, just to kind of round out the IPAs that. We were really lucky in that time to be among the first, I think, to get moving on that trend, which is no longer a trend. It's pretty well established and sought after.
Yeah.
Like you can't have a brewery without having a hazy beer in there. So.
Oh, yeah. Then you're finished in a short time.
Yeah.
But last year you launched a 4.7 of Perle for Svin.
That's right.
Yeah. Is this just the same recipe, or is it a brand new beer?
It's a new beer. I mean, it's going to be impossible to replicate. I mean, we're still trying to like improve it, because for me, I'm not totally happy with where it's at. But of course, when you reduce the ABV and the sugar levels to 4.7, it becomes a little bit trickier to get that same kind of juicy profile without throwing lactose or something like this. So of course the recipe needs to be different to brew smaller, and you need to adjust the hop amounts and everything, but trying to follow more or less what Big Perler is and apply that to Petit Perler, but we're still tweaking.
Yeah, because I'll be honest, I, when it was launched, I was like, I'm a little skeptical.
Yeah.
Because I love the normal one. And when I tasted it, it was, this is really good. And I think you managed to make a really good 4.7 version of the original.
Happy to hear that. I think the idea there is just to... Of course, in Norway, everyone knows who's listening to this, certainly, what the rules are here. So with Easy going away, which was our other kind of 4.5% hazy beer, we need to come with something new. And we just thought, okay, well, people know Perler. They seem to like it. if we can manage to get somewhere close to that with a boutique ale strength, then we might be on something. So
yeah,
just to kind of activate something familiar and you know, get people buying it in higher rotation than Easy, because Easy was my favorite beer, that and House Party. But just it wasn't selling fast enough, so by the time people would buy it, 3, 4, 5, 6 months old, and it's just not the same beer. So
yeah,
if we can move beer faster, then it can be fresher, and then everyone wins.
Yeah. And we have to talk a little about this Rackhouse part, which Lervik has been really known for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And let's start with the logo, because I heard that that has a special story.
Yeah. So where the Rackhouse is now, it's in the building right next to our main production site. It's basically attached, but we had to drill a door into the wall to connect the two. And I can't remember exactly what the history is of the building itself. It was some, I think it's from the 20s or something like that. But before we got it, it was Brun og Blid, like tanning salon.
Yeah, Brun og Blid.
Yeah, it was their storage. And kind of office spot. So they moved all their stuff out. And at the time, we're trying to, like, you know, come up with the concept. What is Rackhouse? We've struggled with name for months and months, what we're going to call it, before finally settling on Rackhouse. Because, yeah, we wanted to make something that was kind of distinct and reflected what the Rackhouse, what the beers coming out of this project were, which are, you know, for us, the highest quality, most experimental kind of beers we were trying to make. But at the same time, we're not pretentious, serious people, so we don't want to, like, you know, completely have our noses up with this project. And it took us long enough to come up with a name. So, but we want to also have like a logo, which was like, you know, again, is going to take another several months, and then we had to start this project soon. So when they removed the sign outside the gate at the Rackhouse of the old Brun og Blid, there was, it had been glued on there. So we removed the sign, and then there was a glue pattern underneath that looked kind of cool, abstract, or whatever. But you know, the more we looked at it, the more we thought about it, it actually was, if you look at the racks that the barrels go on, they're these kind of like sinusoidal wave looking things when they're all in a row, which was exactly what was on the glue pattern. So we just said, rather than trying to reinvent something or start from scratch, this thing serendipitously has the look of a racks kind of thing. It has this kind of abstract look we like, and at the same time, it's, you know, part of the history of the building. So there's no point in trying to reinvent something that's already, it's there for us. So we just stole the someone's, I guess, glue artwork. Hans was saying, I wonder if the guy who glued this on is proud of that his glue pattern artwork is captured now forever in a product. So thanks, whoever glued that on.
Yeah.
You did a good job.
Yeah, that is a funny story, because, yeah, it's just plain glue.
That's all it is. But it encapsulates everything that we like. It wasn't serious. It was looks like racks.
Yeah.
Part of the building, so, yeah.
And you didn't use months to create a logo.
We just, snapped our fingers and there it was. Yeah.
But how did the Rackhouse part just come along? You just
Before that, we always had barrels since I'd been here, whether anywhere from like 10 barrels, I think, maybe 20. Then actually we were brewing a lot of Mikkeller's like beer geek stout recipes here, So he also had some barrels stored here, and it was in our basement, which, it's pretty, the temperature control there, let's say, isn't the best, and the barrels being where they would get shoved in the corner, and getting to them was pretty hard. So as our barrel program, I wouldn't even call it a program back then, it was just we had barrels, and it kept growing and growing. And we had more and more difficulty logistically within the brewery just to get them in and out and everything. It took up a lot of our time. At the same time, we knew that the beers were popular. So when this building came up, we're like, yeah, we need to take a proper run at this whole barrel age thing. So we got the building, bought a bunch of barrels, and then started formalizing our barrel program, which, I think given the history we had with barrel aged beers, it wasn't so difficult for people to see a Lervig barrel age project individually and be like, I would say they probably didn't think they were taking a chance on a new product. It was something that like they knew. But doing it now, I think is it 3.5 years? Something like that. Had Davide Caligari was our original barrel manager. He's since moved on to, where is he at now? O'Hara, yeah, he's in Ireland at O'Hara. He was managing for a while. Now, Shane's doing most of the stuff in here along with the rest of the team, the production team. So it's been steadily growing. We actually just redid our labels. I wouldn't say our branding, but our labels have a completely different look now. So I think tomorrow or Monday we're packaging our first of the new look Rackhouse beers. It's a collab with Neville. They're in Holland. You tried that one. That was the one you tried?
Yeah. Looking forward to that coming out in the Vinmonopolet. And in Rackhouse, you have two parts. You have the off the rack, which is plain beers.
Yeah. So if you look around and see our barrels, they'll have kind of goofy names on the barrels.
Yeah.
Because we have to brew a base recipe, throw them into barrels. I think we have some mezcal, we have rye whiskey, rum. Bourbon, of course, different types of like American whiskeys. So we'll make a batch and fill a bunch of barrels, but not all barrels are created equal. After they're getting to the end of their barrel aging, we go through and taste them. Some definitely stand out. And some lend themselves more to being blended out with other barrels or older batches and whatever. So the barrels that we find are the most like distinct or represent what we hoped for or express best the wood or the previous spirit that was in there. Then we pull those ones aside and those are off the rack. Those are the la crème de la crème. And then the other ones, of course, they're still good, but they're maybe just better to be blended out or, if we want to add chocolate or something like this.
Yeah.
So don't feel like we're destroying a masterpiece to throw chocolate on it kind of thing.
Like the Stoutella, for example.
Stoutella? Yeah. Not your favorite?
Yeah, I love it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. But then that's a lot of chocolate.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And then that kind of muddies out or drowns out some of the barrel character.
Yeah.
Especially if you get really distinct rum or bourbon flavor, if you throw other flavors on top, you might lose that a little bit where we think having that really nice expression of the wood, of the spirit is good enough in itself. You don't need to do anything else. And
That's actually one of my favorites. When you do the stouts for the Rackhouse, is it's the same stout recipe for all of them, or it's
No. We always sometimes we'll repeat a recipe if we're really happy with how the beer turned out, but we really try to get different sweetness profiles. That's generally the thing we're kind of looking to do, is especially with these high ABVs stouts, sometimes the attenuation and how, what the final gravity ends up, it differs. So what you had planned to be final gravity 8 beer ends up at 12, which can work, but it's nice to be able to blend that out maybe with a 6 Plato gravity, yeah, final gravity beer. And of course, like, you don't want to repeat the same thing. So for us, it's part of the malt bill through fermentation. We've got a quite fermented stout that ended up shockingly like really, really sweet. I thought that would ferment out to way lower, but just understanding how these yeasts work at high stress fermentation situations, and then the more variety you have, the more you can do to kind of blend and create and innovate. I don't want to say innovate because it's just throwing beer in a barrel and mixing it, but
walking around there, you guys have a lot of barrels with different beers here. And how many are you expecting to launch every year of this?
This year, I think we've had a goal, which I think should be easy enough to meet, to have 2 different beers a month. Right now, the limitation is just kind of time.
Yeah.
And having the ability it's very labor intensive, you know. It really requires someone to focus in on it for a week, and but then when it's quiet, there's nothing really going on, you know.
Yeah.
There's just sitting there. So it's it does require a lot of planning with our production schedule and on the main site that can, you know, affect when we're able to pull barrels and fill and all that. But I think so far we're ahead of schedule. We might even do more than 2 a month this year. If we can accomplish that, then it's also, you know, it becomes a bit more predictable for our sales staff and then for the customers, you know, to have things coming out at regular intervals. And
That's nice. Mm-hmm. And for how long is the beers on the barrels? It differs, or
100% depends absolutely on even if we buy 2 different sets of bourbon barrels, some will have much more character than the other. So there's that. It depends. We refill barrels up to 3 times, depending on how they still taste after the previous. But of course, with every use, you need a bit longer in the wood to impart some kind of barrel character. Depends on the base beer. Depends on.
But when you said you're using the barrels up to 3 times.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you do after with the barrels? Do you throw them away, or?
No, people buy them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Homebrewers, I guess.
Homebrewers.
Yeah.
They get turned into planters for gardens.
Oh, my heart hurts.
I think there's always a waiting list of people who want to buy the barrels, and people come pick them up in big vans and take them away and hopefully
save you guys for a lot of work.
So that's nice. It's nice to see that people want these barrels and they have a life after the rack house. And
For sure.
Yeah.
And a little bird whispered to me that you have a gin on a barrel.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. We threw some gin into some barrels that were just sitting there kind of drying up. We got a bunch of gin for a different project that we didn't use all of it. And rather than letting the barrels sit there and get dried for a month or two before the next beer could go in, we just said, throw the gin in there. See what happens. So I think we have 10 barrels of gin that's been sitting in these bourbon barrels for almost 2 years. It's taken on a really nice amber color. like this very distinctly gin, but then you get this like really nice bourbon. It trick you your mouth into feeling like it's sweet. So it's a cool product. I mean, for us, it was the whole point of the rack house is to do stuff like that. Throw it in there, let the wood do its work, and then if it comes out good, great. If it doesn't, we've dumped plenty of barrels, but this one will be a first for us to have a spirit come out of Lærvik, so we're all excited.
You distill the spirit here?
No, it's from, off the top of my head, I forget. But yeah, if we had a, we do not have a still here.
No.
We bought it from, I forget the name of the distillery.
Yeah.
I can get that to you after.
But it's a Norwegian one?
No, no. It was a German, I think.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the name escapes me now, but I'll tell you.
Yeah, no worries. So this is coming to Vinmonopolet after a while, or?
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be there
in March.
So everything's ready. We're just now, it's a different, of course, bottle. We need to cork it, not to cap it. We need to have the tamper-proof thing on. So there's a lot of like little kind of back-end boring things that we need to make sure are in order before we start filling. But Dustin, who's he's Grand Skown. They have their distillery here in Stavanger. They just moved back from Trondheim before Christmas. He's going to help us with the filling.
Yeah.
Shout out to Dustin and Maren. So I can help with that. And yeah, I hope within the next month we'll have it in bottles and out to you guys at in Norway by beginning of March.
Yeah. Going to be a limited edition?
Yeah. I think we'll probably get
around 2,000.
That's ambitious. I think the wood sucked in. The angel share of these was pretty large. So if we get, 2,000 bottles, that'd be good.
Yeah, you also use the angel share. Yeah. Expression,
yeah.
I'd just been to Jameson and they use it a lot,
I'd say it happens with beer too. Like you fill the barrels up to the top and you look a month later, it's like, where did all that go?
Yeah. I want to be an angel when I'm dead, so with all that sharing.
Yeah.
And forward, I know you just can't talk about what's coming, but you have any new plans for this year? Something special coming? Or?
Yeah, well, did you get a... We're going to make... Did you see these big footers?
Yeah.
I don't know if people know what a footer is. It's just a massive barrel. These ones are 3,000 liters. That the Neville Collab just came out of. But we're going to clean those up and then do some kind of footer-aged Pilsner, which will be coming out hopefully this spring, depending on how that goes. And we try to plan, but we can't really dictate what the wood does. So there'll be that. We have our Kvike Stout. We did the collab with Pulpit Rock, released just the normal version last year, the Kansakaka. So we'll do like a barrel-aged version coming out soon. What else do we have? I forget the product pipeline. Lots more sours. We have this Neville collab coming out. We have the other footers with the Neville collab. It's going to be fruited.
Hive Dream is coming from
Maine. Yeah, that's right. Non-rack house thing, but we have our brew pub local here in Stavanger. A little 500 liter kit. But the guys there have been doing a lot of these pastry sours, the Hype Dream series, which have been really successful there. So coming February, we're going to brew the first Hype Dreams on our big system here at the brewery. That one's raspberry blackberry, and then we have another mango passion fruit one coming. So it'll be big pastry sours that with loads of fruit and,
nice.
Fun to deal with. Rack house wise, expect the same old good barrel aged, rye. The rye one I'm loving. Maybe and more rye bills here.
This year you have to have more eggnog.
More eggnog?
Yeah.
You like that one?
Yeah, I like it, and everybody I know like it, and it's always empty at the Vinmonopolet. Always.
Okay. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I love eggnog at Christmas. So
yeah.
I'm glad.
And a buddy of mine is trying to recreate it at home.
If this somehow got people to actually love eggnog, and eggnog started appearing at grocery stores in Norway in November like they do in Canada, I would be over the moon. I miss eggnog so much.
Yeah, but this is a different flavor for Norwegians, and I think that's why it's so popular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If eggnog, like cartons of eggnog appeared in Norway, I guarantee you people would be drinking it.
It's in the movies and all that. You guys drink it straight from the carton. So, yeah. We do it with milk.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's great. Yeah. I don't think I have any more questions, actually. So I would like to thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, well, thanks for having us on. It's always fun to talk about the brewery, and makes me think about what it is we're doing every day. So it's nice to kind of gather my thoughts. And
yeah, really great coming here. It's an amazing sight, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
good.
Thank you. Da sier jeg til dere alle der ute at takk for i dag, og hva hadde livet vært uten øl? Ha det bra.
Ha det.